could read about because nobody had the full knowledge. They didn't know there would be an Israel showing up in the middle of the 20th century, right?
Right. Well, and that's the thing that's so funny. Like in the, you know, in the evangelical church, you have like, for example, you know, whether it's like a Hal Lindsey, the Great Lake Planet Earth,
yeah.
who's like one of these end time guys, and he has to be on his 19th revision of,
yeah.
you know, apocalyptic times, because every time they interpret it through political events that are constantly changing, but there's no relief for anybody to have an inner experience of their own divinity because it's all subject to outer world events.
Yeah.
And
so go ahead, Brian.
Well, while you're on that little meme there about the timing of the interpretation, when you get in the later chapters and they go into 9/11, how is one to interpret that before 2001?
Yeah, and I'm saying that nobody had the equipment to interpret it, because for 1,500 years they didn't even know what was being said, other than the priests. The people didn't know. It was in Latin. They just participated in the mysticalness of it. And then you have the Protestants working with inferior material. They're trying to figure out what the hell is Israel. And they don't have an Israel to refer to like we do. I mean,
agreed, yes.
Yeah,
yeah, and they ostracized the Jews. I mean, the Jews are in their ghettos for 300 years or whatever. And so what the heck? They must have thought, well, this Israel can't refer to them. It must refer to our concept of Israel. It must be the Queen Elizabeth or something. You know, you can see the crazy subjectivity. They hadn't even begun.
Right, and
yeah.
I think that's what's so just amazingly powerful about what Ion has laid out is, you know, the good news, the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ was and is supposed to be a universal message to all of mankind that the ascension process is available to everyone. And the Ion's message is the only message that does not exclude a population, a gender, and a preference or anything.
Or a species.
Or a species. That's right, because it starts
yeah.
at, that's exactly right.
You got the lizard people. You got the Lemurians. So what's interesting is that you read this chapter 7, it's all paranoia. It's only 144,000 going to make it, and they're going to unleash this crap on you. Better be a member of that team and get on the spaceship and get the hell out of here. You know, what a crazy paranoid scenario it was.
Yeah, and to get back where we were before about how do you get to DNA based on the words that they're speaking? And how Virginia was saying, look, which I thought also when I was going through it was when you think of the masses, how can only 144,000, you know, quote,
make it,
get ascended, make it, when there are 7 billion people on the earth? Okay, now, and then and then the question is, how do you get to the DNA? Well, in this whole process, and we've all heard Ion say it over and over and over, this is an individual process. And every human being has DNA, has 144,000, even though it's dormant, but everyone has it. Everyone has the DNA, everyone has the 144,000, and now it's the process of activating what we're going to get into.
And that's what Ion lays out in the very first 2 hours of talking about Revelations. Jenny and I were listening to it in the last couple of days. You know, we isolated 4 things that were predominant through all of Revelation, and one was, of course, the false premise of time. One was that you already have it. You got it all. Nothing else going on. Then Ion brought in power and authority. And what was the fourth one?
We had them earlier. The false premise of time, power and authority. You already have it. Oh, and the key of David. Oh, no, that was power and authority. Wait a minute. We've got another one.
The blood.
Oh, the blood. There you go. Thank you.
Sorry. Okay, so those 4 aspects are in the first 2 chapters.
Yeah.
Yes.
All there.
And you're saying you notice those are the things that are echoed all the way through.
All the way through.
All the way through, without
Right. So that. So if I think of looking at chapter 7 and say, what the heck, how does this relate to DNA? And think of, well, that's many chapters down the way. But if I mapped out on my carpet here, every page, everything, all one big, you know, placard, then, you know, I can jump from one to one and they resonate and echo like your four themes. If we, so yeah, we're going to.
And over and over. This is an individual process. And every human being has DNA, has 144,000. Even though it's dormant, but everyone has it. Everyone has the DNA, everyone has the 144,000, and now it's the process of activating it, what we're going to get into.
And that's what Ion lays out in the very first 2 hours of talking about Revelations. There, Jenny and I were listening to it the last couple of days, and, you know, we isolated four things that were predominant through all of Revelation, and one was, of course, the false premise of time. One was that you already have it. You got it all. Nothing else going on. Then Ion brought in power and authority. And what was the fourth one?
We had them earlier. The false premise of time, power and authority, you already have it. Oh, and the key of David. Oh, no, that was power and authority. Wait a minute. We got another one.
The blood.
Oh, the blood. There you go. Thank you.
Okay, so those four aspects are in the first two chapters.
Yeah, yes. All there.
And you're saying you notice those are the things that are echoed all the way through.
All the way through.
All the way through without...
Right, so if I think of looking at chapter 7 and say, what the heck, how does this relate to DNA? And think of, well, that's many chapters down the way. But if I mapped out on my carpet here, every page, everything, all one big, you know, placard, then, you know, I can jump from one to one and they resonate and echo like your four themes. If we, so... Oh, yeah, we're going to reshape this by showing that Chapter 7 is explained right beside it in Chapter 14, which is right there. If you laid them all out on a big floor and saw them as together rather than linear, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And over and over. This is an individual process, and every human being has DNA. Has 144,000, even though it's dormant, but every...
Just a minute. Just so you know, I'm stopping and writing down some notes, so bear with me. I'm just filling in my own notes. I forgot that this was a public forum. So involved in this. I'll refrain from doing that in the future, okay? All right, everybody? All right. Okay.
Everyone has it. Everyone has the DNA. Everyone has the 144,000. And now it's the process of activating it, what we're going to get into.
And that's what Ion lays out in the very first 2 hours of talking about Revelations. There, Jenny and I were listening to it the last couple of days, and, you know, we isolated four things that were predominant through all of Revelation, and one was, of course, the false premise of time. One was that you already have it. You got it all. Nothing else going on. And Ion brought in power and authority. And what was the fourth one?
We had them earlier. The false premise of time, power and authority, you already have it. Oh, and the key of David. Oh, no, that was power and authority. Wait a minute. We got another one.
The blood.
Oh, the blood. There you go. Thank you.
Okay, so those four aspects are in the first two chapters.
Yeah, yes. All there.
And you're saying you notice those are the things that are echoed all the way through.
All the way through.
All the way through. Without.
Right. So if I think of looking at chapter 7 and say, what the heck, how does this relate to DNA? And think of, well, that's many chapters down the way. But if I mapped out on my carpet here, every page, everything, all one big, you know, placard, then, you know, I can jump from one to one and they resonate and echo like your four themes. If we, So, yeah, we're going to reshape this by showing that chapter 7 is explained right beside it in chapter 14, which is right there. If you laid them all out on a big floor and saw them as together rather than linear, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And we were going to work out the seven, all the different types of seven.
I think that's cool, too, because I like all the sevens going across with the candles, the seals, and all that. I think that's great so that they all across. And the other one is the role of the angels, which I thought that the observation, that the revelation is predominantly about the role of man's relationship to the angels was freaking profound. I mean, that is off the freaking chart.
Yeah, it's like, go ahead, Brian. 23,
profound. That's the reason 23. When I got to 23, that's what made me realize, me personally realize that now I know why all this angel stuff is just in your face constantly all through the first 22 chapters. Angels were doing everything. Then when you get to 23, for me, I knew why.
Right.
I knew why. It was because God was directing everything through the angels.
Yeah, John the Revelator oscillates between being someone who's ascending and someone who is ascended and knows the whole process, and he's just watching, he's in the audience watching the angels act out the whole drama. He's watching the angels be the actors.
Right, and the relationship with the angels, which is so profound because, you know, if you did not have that perspective, you would have the perspective of the church with the little man, which is that, you know, this is about your relationship to authority. This is about your relationship to dogma.
What do you mean by your statement when you were talking about John was watching the angels be the actors, or what?
Yeah, since the angels are doing everything all the way through the 22 chapters, and John's watching them, he may be either evoking them, that's another issue, or he's just watching what happens when you're sitting in your throne and watching how the angels do their three aspects, communicate, smote, and help, Lucifer helps. He's watching them do it in this crisis period.
Right.
Little men.
Right, but the thing, I wouldn't call it acting, it's just, it's everything the angels do is directed by God, which is you.
Yeah, and so, when I was going through with Ion, John, sometimes he would be the unknowing, the little man. Other times he seemed to know what was going on and just laying it out for us. Did you notice that? It would oscillate back and forth.
Oh, Bob, one thing I'd just stir in a little bit, because that's probably the best point so far, is you've seen this before, the way Thoth with the tablets would kind of run you around the mountain.
Right.
Nostradamus would run you around the mountain. You got to remember, John was hiding Patmos because they was going to string up his butt anyway.
Right.
So he knew if it was going to get ugly, he would give room for interpretation, if that's the way you say it, so that it could sort of go around the mountain a bit.
Yeah, it's like Joyce when Ulysses got, that came up in 1922 and it got banned and it never saw the light of day till 1934 and it was smuggled. So then he was working on his second book and the Nazis are taking over Europe in the early 30s. That is one practical reason why he wrote it in his gobbledygook, because he didn't want to get in trouble, any more trouble. So I think of him writing that, that's what John was doing. He was being cagey about it.
Yeah, a little bit. Not, like you say, he'd have moments where he'd just lay it out. But at the same time, there was always that prophetic spur. And like what titles and what things were named. Like, why would he choose trumpets or vials or seals, or why those things would be called those things, you see? Kind of gives a bit of I'd say a pneumatic twist to it, so you had room where you could say, no, that was talking about trumpets, or no, that was
right.
Bowls.
Yeah, so he's writing.
Play with that a little bit. He was a little interplay, phatic interplay.
Yeah, he's writing it to cover his ass in case he gets caught, and he is writing it from a very knowing. He's experienced it. He knows how to call forth the angels, and he's telling other people how to do it and what happens, but he's pretending that he didn't know, occasionally leaving that in there. Oh, I just was told this, so to speak.
Yeah, because you got to know this is the day they had sort of eased up on crucifixion. It took too long. They just set you on fire, burn you up. So that was, you know, a little more big than just hanging out for a crucifixion.
Okay, so Ginny, did you ponder that? What we're just talking about now, did you notice that? Do you have a statement to make about that? How that's nowhere near anybody would read the Bible normally, right, traditionally. Or is it that way? How did people read John? What did they think he was doing?
Well, I think the couple things was, number one, because it was at the end of the Bible, as Ion pointed out from the beginning.
Yeah.
Because it was the end, it seemed like it was a culminating point of what the first Jesus, which they don't even know there was three, had done. So that was one aspect,
like,
of it.
He was the guy who came in at the end and wrapped it up and told us what happened, sort of thing.
That's right. So it was a concluding place. It wasn't a beginning place.
He was actually, he came too late. If I remember how I thought about it, I mean, the disciples were there. They did it. They acted out. But John, in the dark days later, said, well, they're all going to get nailed. They should have followed Jesus, and they didn't. And here's what, you know, he's the cleanup guy, almost. You know what I mean? He's not even directly involved. He's sort of later. I used to think, oh, he was 100 years later, and he wrote this because he was pissed or something.
Well, and notice it isn't St. John either.
Right. Yeah, you see,
John
that
the Revelator. It's a
Ooh,
difference.
That's a good point. How did the Catholic Church view his contribution? Well, they did put it in. I mean, they did canonize it, so they did put it in, so they had some respect for it. But,
Yeah, he was not St. John, who, when I, you know, I read the Bible through about 60 years ago, you know, read it all the way through, just made sure I read it a bit every day. I didn't know what I got out of it, basically nothing. But though it might have had some effect, you know, something, who knows, maybe he said, yeah, better be a good boy or something.
Sounds like cash flow today, doesn't it, folks?
Oh, yeah. It served me well. It served me well not knowing anything. But I used to wonder, who's this John? Is he the John who hung out with Jesus? You know, I used to be even confused on that. But then I heard later that he wasn't another John, but he was a guy who came late, you know?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, so Ginny, so what we're hearing about John is, so he's the main guy. He's better than the stupid disciples who are hanging around with the third Jesus. That's a new point, isn't it, Ginny, in the Bible world?
Well, yeah. It's based upon the premise that we have this dormant power within us, and if the whole premise of the Bible is to bring us into our power, then I agree with that statement. But the Catholic Church sure as shit wasn't into promoting anybody coming into their power, because from the very beginning you were a rotten scumbag, in the eyes of God, and if you get baptized, well, maybe you'll at least not go to hell. Yeah, I agree, but...
Hey, Greg, look at it this way. For 1,500 years, the Bible, the Catholics carried around this manuscript and, you know, chained it to the altar. Nobody could get near it and read it. It's like an update of the Ark of the Covenant. It's a sacred artifact that that the peasants couldn't interact with. It was like if somebody had an iPhone, you know, 100 years ago, and everybody around the elite, you know, worship the iPhone, but everybody else didn't know what was going on with the iPhone. Look at this Bible was a new invention, a new artifact that no one knew anything about it. They didn't know the constituents of it. Is that an accurate way, Ion, to interpret how they hypnotized the masses? Because they had this sacred thing that had power.
Well, it's the prototype again of the Ark of the Covenant. It's the power of God's Word. It supersedes everything you lowly humans can embrace. And you can't question it. You can't question the Word of God. No, you can't question it. And we say, great, but then at least you ought to get the Word of God that you're not questioning.
Yeah, but wait a minute. I'm asking about how did people fall think this was sacred. I understand the Jews having the Ark of the Covenant and having that for their Solomon's Temple and all that. But why? You're getting papyrus in the early days. Paul's writing out letters, right? And some kind of material, and they're going out, and people think these are magical letters. I see it as
a
new technique.
Then, I'll go with you there, but then my question then comes, okay, so then how did the Dead Sea Scrolls change that concept that you're laying out?
Well, they did. That's now. I'm talking about the way it was. Why did people even pay respect to this artifact? I guess because the people who had the weapons and owned the economy, they made a lot out of this manuscript, and so it was accepted as a given prop in the elite's reality.
And
the
church yet, was
and,
law.
And yet the Catholic Church then would include the Apocrypha.
They didn't, or they did?
They did.
The King James doesn't.
Correct.
Oh, I didn't know that. So the Apocrypha is in the Catholic Bible.
Certainly.
Have you seen that, Ginny?
Oh, yes, of course. Absolutely. Okay. The Apocrypha is in the Catholic Bible. I think that when you look at how the Old Testament was set up and the nation that was referred to as Israel, which was what came out of Jacob's loins, the way that the entire nation of Israel was quote-unquote judged, or the quote-unquote favor of God fell on an entire nation, was based on three people. It was based on the prophet, the priest, and the king. So the king had one role, the prophet, the seer had another role, and the priest had another role. And the prophet would be a symbol of the word. Okay, so, and the king would be the symbol of authority. So what would happen is that in that flow, if the prophet, the priest, and the king were all aligned and they were all obedient with the same vision and all went well for that nation, and if they were out of whack, then the nation was punished somehow or went into captivity or whatever ended up happening. So in the New Testament, when the Holy Spirit came to common man, it broke up that whole little game, and then each individual person was empowered to have their own divine experience or their own relationship with God. Well, in the way that it kind of happened to follow that same form in terms of what you were talking about for 1,500 years, you've got the kings, which were the landowners, you have the priests, which were the people who were ruling the church, and you had the prophet, which was the person who was interpreting the word, and they were basically telling every single person what it all meant. So it was still an authoritative position. It was not an empowerment position.
Yeah, and so the early Christians had the letters in their own little communities in the catacombs or wherever, and they're running around. That is hijacked by Constantine, who, it turned out, the Christians for 300 years were the only ones reading. And so when they started to get into a bit of a bureaucracy with the end of the Roman Empire, the Christians could be the managers because they could read, right? Isn't that the beginning of moving it out of this personal revelation, which might have been passed on in the oral tradition among the disciples and the Christians in the first 100 years, right? They were just talking about it, weren't they? And witnessing Jesus?
They were talking about it, and they were also using art. So if you go to the early, you know, those first quote-unquote 300 years, the oral tradition of telling the story of Christ, it was accompanied with art, because a lot of people were illiterate, as you know, Bob. So they couldn't read anything, so they were having to be told through pictures and through the oral tradition.
So that
was the one who brought it into a more of a meme.
An administrative thing. It's like,
correct.
So, and so if it's the Bible's used for administrative purposes, that's 1,000 years wasted. I mean, it's got not, what we're learning about it could be in there, but it would not be useful to the people who use the hypnotic effect of the Bible as an ark, as a hypnotizing medium, as an external power.
I don't know if this history that I have is correct. Constantine only had the Bible canonized for political purposes to unite Rome for his own power. He couldn't have cared if it was Judaism or whatever, but he wanted to find one central religion, I guess, to bring political power to his area and say, okay, now this is what we're all subscribing to. Is that
right? And McClellan would say that
so,
was only
so now
due to...
So now the question then is, who was king when Constantine was in his place of power?
Well, wasn't he king?
Constantine?
Yeah.
Was he emperor?
King of what?
Well, okay, hold your statement. Greg, the administration of the Roman Empire at that point of Constantine was due to roads and papyrus, right? And soldiers and chariots, whatever they had. That they required some kind of homogenizing thing because it was spreading over vast miles, which nobody had done before. So they had to have a standard salute. Okay, we all salute. We all support this thing called Jesus, which was a sign in a Bible. That's what I'm calling the administrative use of the Bible. Nothing to do with what we're talking about. And it strikes me how you could only know what the Bible was now. You could only know now. And maybe personally, I mean, on a mass level, personally, a genius could figure it out, but it's not the whole use of the Bible over the last 2,000 years is because no one knew what to do with it. It was used for other purposes.
Yes, control.
Yeah.
It's control.
So then Ion brings in the word king. When you say who is king, why are you saying that, Ion?
Because that would have effect based on what Jenny was talking about earlier of the king, the priest,
mm-hmm.
and the different aspects. So it certainly wasn't when Herod was around, was it, Bob?
Well, no, there was a king, wasn't there? We're talking about the role of king.
Well, the king during Constantine's rule was not Constantine. It was, let's see, who was the king?
Wouldn't there be kings of different tribes and groupings?
That's right. But Constantine, as you said, Bob, was to merge them together. No, sorry. Greg,
yeah, he was the uber king.
That was how to merge them, you see.
Yeah, a constancy, a uniform standardizing. So he was king of kings.
Now, we are talking about Flavius, Valerius, Aurelius, Constantinius. That's the one, correct?
Yeah, the guy who had the vision is the
great.
The one okay. who saw the cross, which I don't know if it's true or not, but that's...
Well, he was the Roman emperor. Okay, but that's not what we're talking about. Who would be king of the Jews when Constantine was the emperor?
Yeah, that's before they were scattered in 580 or so. Yeah, so there would be the Jews in Palestine at that point.
Whoa. Now, wait. Was there Palestine then? There wasn't Palestine then, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Well, whatever they called it, I'm just saying that.
You're right. I'm sorry. I was just trying to be clear.
Yeah, the Jews. There is the Jewish religion happening, and they're not into this Christian stuff. Like, yeah, who the hell is the king of the Jews? That's a mystery or a confusion there, right, Ginny? I mean, who's the king of Israel? You've got the Jewish thing, and they're not even accepting the New Testament.
I'm looking to see who was the king.
At one point in the Jewish history, there was no difference between Christianity and Judaism. They did accept the same thing. And then at some point, there was a splitting of it, a more defined, so the Jews could say we're Jews and the Christians could say we're Christians. But at some point, according to the history that I read, at one point, they were all on the same team.
No, there were no Christians. And then Jesus was started being himself. They crucified him, and those that did not like that action were later called Christians. But the Jews never accepted Christ. He was an asshole, you know, a rebel. Get this guy out of here. He's stirring everything up. So they get rid of him. Those that were associated with Jesus and the disciples, they mingle, and then when did they start calling themselves Christians? They probably didn't, because a lot of them probably were Jews, technically, by birth.
I'm looking at this. Mm-hmm. was the king of the Jews, Ion, during that time? I'm looking
at that. We just brought it up. Y'all got to play.
Yeah. Okay, so, Brian, I don't want to... Brian, if you don't like... If we're talking too much historically, which may be good, we're doing this in the beginning session because we're getting a context for this. But, Brian, if you want to bring up other issues, we don't want to get bogged down. If you're not liking what we're doing, anybody can say anything on that level. I don't want to get bogged down with Constantine. I want to know what the lampshade is or something. You know, you can interrupt any time.
Well, yeah. Bob, you just went into this whole spiel about, you know, the all these different histories or whatever, and then but you want to know about the lampstands. I can't help you much when you go into the history thing, other than, you know, what's laid out in Revelation as it was laid out. But, you know, I'm good with wherever you guys go with it.
Yeah, and it's the beginning part. You know, flopping around here. I like what we're doing right now. Do you like it, Greg?
Absolutely. I'm enjoying the whole thing.
Yeah. And, okay, and Brian, he doesn't know much about this history. He never looked into it, so it's okay Brian's being silent. I don't want you to be silent and frustrated.
Oh, I'm not frustrated.
Good.
I'm sitting back, Bob. I'm letting you shoot your wad. If it was to get calmed down, then I know we're going to get into the we'll get into
it. Oh, you started into the good stuff. You're saying this ain't the good stuff? Okay, but no, I get what you're saying. Yeah, that's what we're doing. I'm not trying to lead it, but I am trying to figure out, why are we, what is this Israel in the seventh, you know, these tribes? Like, what the hell is it referring to? And I'm getting the new impression or image or insight. This Bible was not, this was not, could not be interpreted. It's not that we're providing a renegade interpretation. The thing couldn't have been interpreted until now.
I do have a couple of questions on the, since we're on chapter 7.
Yeah, go ahead.
A couple of the questions that came up. One was, Ion gave his title to this chapter, and his title was the 144,000 Jews.
Right.
Now, my question was, when he says Jew, and he, I mean, you guys went into it a little bit about Jews and Jerusalem and what it really means when you're referring to the 144,000. What a Jew is, and you know, and then the whole Israel and Jerusalem. That's one question. And the other question is...
Oh, no, wait, now let's do that question. Y'all talk about that a second, and we'll answer it, because otherwise you'll lose Bob, and then you won't get anywhere.
Okay. So, yeah, Jew. 144,000 Jews. Now, we know... when Ion lays it out, 144,000 is double helix strands of DNA. So, and
yes,
he's calling 144,000 Jews. So in my mind, I'm thinking a Jew is a double helix strand.
Well, now, that's what the different tribes, you gotta go, well, wait, y'all supposed to talk about it for a minute. Y'all got any discussion before we answer?
No, well, you gave me a hint. I want to say this. When we say a double helix, which is two strands, there's 144,000 of those two strands,
double
correct?
Double strands, that's correct.
Yeah, a helix. So there's actually 288,000 threads, correct?
Well, yes, but in a polypeptide bond, the thread is inclusive of a DNA strand. So
I mean, it's a Möbius, it's a loop.
Yes, that's correct. Otherwise, there's nothing to replicate against. You know, when the threads, it's got to be as a ladder.
Right, okay, it's all loops.
You don't have half a ladder. You don't call a ladder with so many rungs. You don't call a half a ladder. It's one ladder. So it's 144,000 ladders, say it
right.
That way. Then it's
logical. Because, when we looked at the picture of it on the computer, it would always be open at the top, so it looked like two separate strands.
That's correct.
So there's two intertwining strands, and a double helix is a one thing, but it looks like it's made up of two strands. Mm-hmm. But it's one thing.
That's
a
correct.
One.
One total. Like a pair of pants is one thing you put on. And if you say it that way, you don't get tangled up, because this will get little. See, scientists just now figuring out what in the hell DNA is anyway. So it's fresh and new to go with this. Anybody else? Jenny, Greg, you have a discussion with Brian from that level before we jump in?
No, I'm good.
Okay. And before you jump in, I wanted to say, as you started to talk, I remembered that the 12,000, the 12,000, the tribes, I can see that each tribe is 12,000 double helixes.
Uh-huh.
So that makes sense once we know that.
And good. Bob's good. Bob's good, because he's wrangled us right into the actual answer. Okay, Brian, the reason it's called 144,000 Jews specifically is because in the original Jewish, I hate to say the word, law, the point of this, so it is written, so it is, when this was scribed, they did this always as a point of remembrance. They broke, when the Ten Commandments were smashed and broke up by Moses, they gathered up them broken things and put them in the ark with the bones of Joseph. See, that was their point of remembrance. The Elisha cup at Passover is to remind you of the Passover and the significance of the blood of the Lamb. The 144,000 Jews, this whole entire work was to remind you, Brian, that you are a God. And even through Asher and through Simeon and through all the Benjamin, through all the tribes, it divides them into 12 sets of 12,000. And so, therefore, they could discern which strand you were from. Because that's the lineage that's trying to be outlined here. And all this is a legend to remind you how to put it back together. So when you get smart and find out what DNA is, and you create it, and you then instigate the science that validates this ascension process, you'll know to have 12 categories, as Bob said, through a tribe. A tribe. And they'll actually call it that once y'all get a little further down this place. They'll hear this, and they'll apply it as an aperture science to tribes of the bundles of 12,000 sets of double helix strands of DNA. So what John was trying to do was lay it out here so that you could remember how to put it back together when you figured out what the fuck it was you were supposed to put together.
Okay.
Okay,
go ahead,
so
Jenny.
So let's just take me. So in my remembrance, what I remember, I could say, out of the 12 tribes that are named in the Book of the Revelation, and you have the tribe of Judah, the tribe of Reuben, of Gad, of Asher, of Manasseh, on and on and on.
Of the tribe of Levi.
Mm-hmm. We're sealed 12,000. So
yes.
I am sealed out of the tribe of Levi.
Well, okay, and yes, and all that's for, dear, here's what that's for. All that's for is you get how DNA replicates, it rips, it goes so far to 23 chromosomes, and then pulls back and replicates itself. And that, based on the RNA, is what tells it what to replicate from a cellular level. Well, all this does is set the pecking order for how you organize a DNA chain of 144,000 strands to say you are of the Levitical strand. That means nothing other than on your number one of the DNA plate. And if you study that the way they do a single now, they can tell who the baby daddy is based on where they start with the points of the DNA mass chronometer of DNA. You can see in 99.9% can tell that that's the baby daddy because of where they start with that DNA replication in the child that they're also testing. So in a Levitical order, the Levites, the L, would be your first line. So you would replicate 12 tribes from your first line, which would be Levitical. And if you're Benjamin, that would be number one, and then it would recycle from there. Because you know how DNA replicates from the RNA that's being giving information to it? It has to set an order, otherwise everyone would be identically the same. And if every...
Yeah, hello. Let me see what's happening here.
All participants are now unmuted.
Does anybody want to say anything? I went more than half an hour. It was pretty interesting, so I just kept listening. Anybody want to say something?
Good stuff, Bob. This is Lynn.
Beg your pardon?
This is good stuff. This is Lynn.
Yeah, Lynn. Lynn, yes, it is.
Yeah.
Carolyn was just saying, pretty neat. Carolyn missed this one. She wasn't there at the first.
I used to listen to this early stuff.
Yeah.
Ian kind of talks like, he doesn't sound like he does now, you know? It's almost like he's sitting at the table with you.
Well, no, it's a better recording system. What he sounds like now, he's in...
More like a participant with you guys.
Well, you heard Bob. Bob, was really railing him in and trying to make him behave. So that was him behaving. Yeah, really.
Yeah, it's not going to last long. He's being real polite because in the long run, he has an agenda, and he's going to make the Revelations book happen and then be filled out in the rewrite, we don't know what he's really up to. He knows he's going to take it over and then take it into directions we didn't even know, because we start looking at the angel diagram and we spend 4 or 5 months on it.
And this is such an excellent way to really introduce people to Revelation, because it's like summing up so much. People really should get the Revelation series. It's really important.
It really is. It's key. Absolutely.
We'll
listen to more.
Who's here?
Bob, are you going all night again, or are you going to end at 3?
I don't know. So I can go for another couple of weeks. I might go.
I wish you would. This is going to be kind of sad waking up not dialing in and hearing your voice.
Yeah, that's right. You won't have Bob to kick around anymore.
Did you ever have any moment of, not being able to be coherent of what you were thinking or saying?
No.
I don't think so, because you certainly got me while I was actually on the TRX when I was talking to you about, and you're like, hey, you can't articulate what you're saying. And I'm thinking, my God, I can't articulate, and he can articulate, because I can't articulate.
Yeah, no, I can't.
How many days?
Yeah, I didn't get I didn't fall asleep. I didn't get exhausted. It was pretty well easy to do. As long as I had people to talk to and thoughts to engage me and listening to stuff and playing music, it was a piece of cake.
I wonder if you'll even be able to fall asleep.
No, I can fall asleep just like that. I always do. Every night I stay up 20, 21 hours. I lay down and I'm asleep in 10 seconds. And then I wake up about three and a half hours later. It's always the same. And
your hair
is
turning browner.
Right. I think you just said that today, didn't you, Carolyn? You were looking at it again.
I heard it.
Yeah.
I heard you looking on the top of your head and said, your hair is even browner.
Yeah, I was saying to Bob at one time, this is our reality show. It's like people have been in our living room with us for the past week, watching me go off for my walk and to the pool and lying in my tower and making Bob food and yelling at Bob, making noises in the kitchen. I mean, that's our life.
Yeah, I was right there.
The best Thanksgiving I've ever had.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, is it? When is Thanksgiving? When is it?
Tomorrow?
Are you with your family? Are you with your family, Gene? Are you with your family, Gene?
Yeah.
And what? You haven't even started to have it yet.
I'm having it now.
Where did you travel?
With us. With us.
I'm having it for 5 days. 6 days.
Have you? You guys are engaged in it with families and that already?
No, it's called Thanksgiving and Gratitude for you.
Oh, okay. So did you go somewhere to be with your family, Gene, or you live near your family?
Did you know you can't squeeze your butt cheeks and cry at the same time? You can't.
Is that right?
You can't squeeze your butt cheeks and cry at the same time.
Well, what are you arguing for your limitations for?
That's not a limitation.
No,
it's a quality.
Okay. What the heck am I talking to you guys for? Should we go back to who's here? Is anybody going to talk?
Cut us off.
No.
Oh, Leon. Leon was blocked. And I know there's somebody from Africa. I wonder who that is.
Michael Brown.
Michael Brown?
Bees.
Nobody speaks. I don't even know why I ask anybody. Nobody speaks. It's ridiculous. Well, you did.
Hello?
Yes, hello. Who's that? That's Leon.
Oh, yeah, correct. I just got in. I took a nap for the last 2 hours, so I'm back.
Well, that's
finish
nice.
Out.
Yeah, but Leon, Bob's threatening to keep going. We're all ready for him to stop, but he's saying he wants to play. He's doing the Revelation rewrite, and it's 6 hours, but he's only got one and a quarter hours before he does Eben, and he's supposed to stop at the end of Eben, but he won't.
Is your Saturday call for the rest of it?
What?
Will you continue on the Saturday call for the rest of the rewrite?
He's not going to do Saturday.
What Saturday calls?
I mean, will we hear the whole 6 hours at some point?
Maybe. I don't know what I'm going to do. I know that Eben is over at 1:30 for me, and I still got another 6 hours before I go to bed, so I could do the 6 hours after Eben.
Yeah, can we purchase it?
What did you say?
I said, can we purchase it? I'd purchase it as an MP3.
No, it's not for sale yet. So is Allison there and Madeline?
Are you suggesting that if we promise Bob to purchase it, that he'll stop? So we can all go to bed?
Yeah, it's weird. Okay, listen, I'm going to go back and start playing some more. I just dropped in to see how everybody was. Everybody's confused and putting restrictions on me and trying to rein me in. No fun. I'm going back to listen to this stuff. Okay, so nothing else to say?
Nothing else to say. Carry on.
Nothing else.
All right.
Carry on.
Mute. Okay, I'm muting you guys. Talk to you later.
Bye.
I'll be back before 12. That's when we go back before in 2 hours. Yeah, I'm not going to take a stop, I don't think.
Like an hour and 10 minutes.
Okay.
No, I might go over 2 hours, which will be...
You have to do Eben.
Yeah, that's at 12.
No, it's at our 11, isn't it?
No, it's 12.
11 to 12.
She starts at 2, I'm 2 hours before. So I can go 2 hours.
Gotcha.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for your cooperation, everybody. Please let me go, and I will head on out by myself.
No, wait.
We never do.
Yeah.
We never do.
Okay, bye.
Let me go.
All participants are now muted.
Okay. What do I have to do here? That, everything's ready.
Everybody was identically the same, then they might decide that you did indeed come out of a monkey's butthole rather than the tribe of Levi.
Okay, very good. Okay, very good. And then within that, the tribe of Levi has quote-unquote certain, maybe quote-unquote characteristics?
Just the order. Just the order,
just
darling.
The order.
It's just the order. Because, see,
okay.
Later Christians got tangled up with that. Well, I'm a Paul, I'm a Peter,
got
I'm
it.
A John.
Okay,
see,
okay.
I'm more God than you because I'm from John the Baptist.
Right. What? The order of what? It's the order of
important.
What?
The order of how the DNA replicates itself.
Okay. So are we talking about the actual blood of the Jewish people thousands of years ago?
No, it's just an example of how you'll read a DNA chart in your very recent future.
They will look at what they see and say, this clump is Levi.
Well, they will after they listen to this, but until then, they may call that subset 1
right.
of 12. And see, Brian might be a Benjamin. Actually, he is. Brian may be a Benjamin. Actually, he is. So, Brian.
So, wait a minute, Ion. You're saying that the terms Levi and the 12 tribe names do not relate to the actual historical Jewish tribes.
Well, they do for inference, so you can understand it now, Bob. They had to do it some way. They couldn't certainly shouldn't have nucleic acids named in Revelation for you to understand this. So they
made sure the tribes bred among themselves, I assume, right?
Well, not necessarily.
Necessarily. You can cross over.
Hell, Moses went with the Moabites right out of the chute.
Right, right. Okay. But I'm trying to figure out why does it have to be the Jewish tribe names if it's not related to the blood?
Because they had no other way to lay it out for you to get it now. It was just it's a metaphor so you can figure it out for now. It's the only reference they can go by.
Are you saying that this chapter 7 is what a student in a university would study in the near future as the layout of DNA and RNA?
Absolutely. Once your civilization kicks in, it already has.
Right. Once lockdown Connie rule happens, then yeah.
Y'all have no idea, but I can't talk about that. But go ahead.
So, well, isn't that pretty amazing, right, Ginny, that these terms are going to be used? I mean, they can't use any terms. It's preferable to have this metaphor of Israel.
The whole thing is that way. That's what they say. They say every word of the Bible is the living word of God, and it's true, and every other word's a damn lie. Because it's constantly, just like you accuse us of, it constantly undoes itself as it flows along, you see. And that's okay, because in that structure is indeed the answer. And that's why Brian has the specific question, which is on point, on topic, that this particular point gets cleaned up completely. Okay?
Right. So why would you call, when you call Brian Benjamin, what does that refer, what is Benjamin? What's that referred to?
It's one of the 12 tribes, and Brian would, his number one section when they test his DNA, because y'all are on the leading edge. So don't think you won't get poked to have it. You'll be the guinea pig that shows how this is.
Yeah, like in the movie The Event, the TV show The
certainly.
Event. Yeah,
certainly. So Brian's will be his number first strand or first sequence. It's actually a sequencing.
Yeah.
Will be B or Benjamin.
Okay. So there's 12 distinguishable sequence
lines.
Differences.
Lines, that's correct.
If you look at all the kinds of DNA double helixes, you will notice there's about 12 types.
No. It's not 12 types. It's 12 strands, but you just got to know which one is which, you see.
Oh, the strands intertwine differently?
Intertwine completely into each individual cell, Bob. That's the beauty of this thing. There'll be 144,000 strands in every cell in your damned body.
Right, so you would look at a cell and see the 144,000 strand, and there'll be 12 clusters of types.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. It's a little bit more than that. But if you've ever looked at an actual DNA, it's a card with one strand, and it has little dots, three dots, two dots.
You say a card.
A piece of paper. If they run your DNA, to know that DNA is individual to you, it has a little card with little dots. And
you mean the laboratory has a piece of paper?
Yeah. Right, of what they're using and doing right this hot second. But now that's a change. So there will be no way to keep track of it if they don't sort it by 12 sets of 12,000. And if you want to see a picture of it, if you'll watch the Fifth Element, they show it. They actually show what it actually pretty much looks like.
Are you saying they show what a lab technician sees?
144,000 double helix strands look like.
Well, in the Fifth Element with Bruce Willis. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, about 1999 or so. I saw that movie.
They lay it out.
Okay. Right. Well, what did they know what they were doing? Why did they show 144,000 parts?
Because that's what the perfect being had.
How did the writers of the movie know that?
They must have read Revelation.
No, they must have had someone interpreting it correctly for them.
Or they were just making science fiction and fine, either way.
Lucky accident.
What? Just like John, a lucky accident.
Yeah, like today in the show, Furry Lynn. I didn't know it was Hedda Hopper's family name. That kind of linguistic accident.
Right. Well, accident, yeah.
But it's not an accident, I understand.
Right.
It's implied in the words. You're channeling the language effects.
Good.
Unknowingly.
Okay, stay on topic, Bob. Now, Brian, what's your second question?
Well, just to stay with this right here, okay, when you say your starting point or your first point of reference might be...
Of how they read it, yes.
But you have all of
yes.
12.
Okay. Yes, absolutely. But they'll have to be able to start somewhere to calculate, because
right.
if they have to find out if you're the baby daddy or not... They got to know which one to start with. Otherwise, there might be another 144,000 baby daddies that would qualify.
Yeah.
It's a sequencing.
Right.
You see, Ginny, I would be interested in going into a lab and having a scientist show me what DNA looks like under their microscope and then relate it to this.
Well, you could go on your lucky box and get a picture of DNA, a DNA result right now.
But Ion, how would individuals who were, let's say, halfway, three quarters of the way on their way to an ascending process, how would their DNA look different than the small man?
Oh, okay. There you go. That's valid. Okay. Now that would be cleaned up, because what's actually going to happen is that's an impossibility at this red hot second, because you're blessed science hasn't even ascertained that there is actually the potential for 144,000 DNA anyway. And if there were, if y'all got it, let's say you, Jenny, and Brian, and maybe Bob, I don't know, if he did, he'd never admit to it, but you got it, then you would come as a perfect being. But they'd still only look at one double helix strand of DNA. And then they'd notice something's up. You have no RH factor.
They'd notice that in the one double helix.
Yes. Well, they'd know the other anomalies in an actual blood test. That you know, your platelets are different. Things would be obviously different. And that's going to begin quick, because this now becomes the by default setting that lays it out for the human creators. If they engage the power of the word, if they you want to get that, because it'd be no fun to get 144,000 double helix strands and have an eternity of misery.
That's right, because the strand, the cross rips the strand open.
That's
but
right.
it works, the word is the word. So if you're going to use negativity words and negative anticipation and negative expectation, that will just accelerate your death process.
But
Ginny, there are no negatives, so I don't
yes,
know what that
they are
means.
If they create them.
Yes, there are, Bob, because that's what you were reaming me about the other night.
What?
You were the one who told me that.
That there are negatives?
That chromosome 14 is a transformative agent, but it is not, it has no inherent quality to it. It's
right.
neutral in its effect, in the sense that it will be informed by the words that you're speaking, the song that you're singing, so to speak, in your body. So if the song you're singing is, woe is me, your woe is going to be accelerated, and you'll be woe and out and back in the guff quicker than you can say lickety-split.
Right,
but
if you call it... Yeah, if it's woe, but the person may not think it's woe. They may want it. You know, it's nebulous about what is woe to people. From another person's perspective, it looks like woe, but I'm just reminding us that we don't know what anybody is. You know, we can't judge what their quality is.
But we're not judging it. We're saying that you want to embrace the word. So when you have the ascending, now see, Bob likes that portion, and I like ascended, and that's Bob doesn't like that one. So when you start engaging ascension, you not only have the ability in your meat sack body to get back to where you were, you also have the ability to cease thinking, if that's the way to say that, So you have a chance to embrace your eternalness in your meat sack body. Because, like you say, if it's troublesome, you'll be perfectly troubled.